Steve Cohn, welcome to the Guitar Radio Show. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you. Love your music. Always have.
Thank you. Thank you.
You know, I've known your music for a long time. I used to play in a band with you, obviously, and
long time ago.
Back
too.
Back when there were dinosaurs.
I don't think it was that far ago.
But you know, a lot of people don't know about you, and there's some things that I still don't know about you, and we're hoping to find out today. But and I know there's a bio on stevecohn.net, but why don't you give people a little background on you? And your career and your experience with this instrument.
All right, let me see, where do I start? Started in Rochester, New York, you know, like everybody had a dream to be in a band and play music, you know, it's always been a passion for me. And just did the local bar scene for a while. Got an opportunity to move down to Long Island, joined a band down there and gigged the tri-state area for a few years, and then that kind of fell apart after, you know, trying to get signed and management and all that stuff. I actually met up with you guys and started playing with you for a while, and then decided to take a little break and move out to Arizona, which soon got boring, and started building a home studio and started recording and writing as much as I could and started releasing stuff on my own, which led to finally getting a deal with a small label out of Germany, which is the Cyanide Scream project, which is still me, but, you know, they want to put a name on it. And I release my own solo stuff as well, you know, all over the world digitally and all that good stuff, you know.
Right, right. And I got to tell you, I am a fan of, I mean, you've got, what now, about 14 discs out?
Yeah, something like that,
Yeah. And, they're all amazing, and you always step it up with every disc that you do.
Thank you. I mean, that's what I try to do. You always try to improve. You know, it's not just improving on songwriting, but it's improving on performance, and being everything is recorded in my home studio, and that I always learn and get better with each album or each release.
Right.
It's a constant learning process, you know.
Yeah, for sure. What year do you remember first picking up the guitar? Do you remember?
Oh, do you really want me to say how old I am? I guess that's no secret, huh? We were talking about dinosaurs before. Probably 77, 78, something like that. I was a late starter. I was, you know, like 11th, 12th grade of high school.
Right. Did you?
You know, my brother had a guitar that, you know, that when he wasn't around, I'd go down and try and play Smoke on the Water or something, you know. And that's no joke. I mean, that's what I played. Then when he moved away, he left it behind, so it kind of was, you know, something I could actually play around with more.
Right.
Then my mom saw that I had some interest, and she bought me my Hondo Les Paul copy.
Wow. Do you still have that guitar?
I don't have that, no. Yeah. It's one of those things that you trade in, you know, when you're younger because you want to get something a little better.
Right.
And when you realize when you're trading in, they're not giving you anything for it, you should just kept it, you know. Spend the other 50 or 75 bucks or whatever. yeah, a lot of guitars have come and gone over the years, but...
Yeah, I know the feeling.
My first... I don't know how deep you want me to get into guitars right now, if that's something you want to cover later. But
no, it's fine. Go for it.
My first... real guitar was a Gibson Explorer.
Ah.
And I bought it used, and I still have that, but, you know, like a dumbass, you know, if I can say that, you don't have the money to buy another one, so you do things to that one. I put a Kaler on it, you know, which was a mistake, but, you know, and I had it refinished, you know, so, you know, it was a mid to early 70s Explorer when I bought it.
Right.
So if it was original right now, it'd be worth a lot more than it is. So.
Right.
But not something I want to get rid of. It's something like I'm taking that one to my grave, you know.
That's an heirloom, right?
That was the first real good guitar I had.
Right. Yeah. Who would you say is probably your earliest influence or the person that had the most direct influence on you in regards to you going ahead and picking up that instrument?
Oh, well, you know, believe it or not, the whole thing of music that really got me into music was watching the Partridge Family as a little kid. I mean, I wanted a family like that, you know. I said, why can't our family be like that? Why can't we all be doing music, you know? I mean, it may sound odd, but, And then obviously, you know, you get the, you see those KTEL records that have all the hits, you know, different artists or whatever that used to come out. And I was over at a friend's house one day and there was a song came on and I heard it and I was just blown away. And I was like, what is this band? And it was Rock and Roll All Night, Party Every Day by Kiss. Right. Never seen them. So it was the song that actually got me into them first. I didn't know who they were. I just heard a song and I was like, that's a great song. And that made me, then when I saw them, I was like, that's what I want to do. I want to be able to entertain and perform. You know, so that would, I would say Kiss is the one that made me actually really pick up the guitar.
Yeah. Yeah. I have to say the same thing for me as well. It's the reason I picked up the bass. I was a bass player first. So I have to admit, I saw a picture first and I was like, what the hell's that?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. But see, for me, it was just opposite because there was no picture on that album. You know, it was just a track that came on. Right. I can remember sitting over at my friend's house and hearing it and going, what is that song? It sounded loud and huge, you know, and explosive.
Right.
I think it was actually a live recording, so. And everybody knows that their live recordings are, you know, the first live album is what put them on the map, you know.
Right, for sure.
But, you know, now you find out it really wasn't all that live. But whatever. It had us fooled. It made us like them and buy them, right?
That's for sure. I once met Eddie Kramer, the producer from that album, and I asked him about that, and he said that they had 8 tape machines going with a loop with loops all over the studio of crowd noise. And they just blended them all together and put it on.
Really?
There. Yeah, but they were live shows. I mean, they were shows taken from a lot of them were taken from the Cobo Hall in 1975, and then they went ahead and added stuff.
Yeah, like wasn't there like Davenport, Iowa or something? Because I know that they re-released something. There was some tracks from Iowa show or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Like
yeah.
Two Timer, songs I never even heard live before, you know?
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Anyways, going down Kistery Lane here.
So, you know.
Right, Kiss was a huge influence, no doubt about it. And of course, after that was, you know, when I was listening to Kiss, there was a guy in the high school library. We were able to listen to records and brought in Double Live Gonzo by Nugent. And I was just like, he's like, this is so much better. And, you know, it took me a little while, but once I heard him, I was just like, wow, this is great. So, you know, the Ted Nugent, Aerosmith, first concert I ever saw was a Foghat concert, which my brother listened to. And I went, and there was a band opening for him, and there was this guy running all over the stage. I was like, this is crazy. Look at this show. And that turned out to be Cheap Trick. So, you know,
wow.
Been a fan of them ever since, you know. So,
yeah.
So I guess those are the big 4 or 5 bands that really made me want to play.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, that's a good basis.
Yeah, yeah, I would think so, right? And, and I think, I mean, all those guys are still going, you know, the ones that are still alive anyways, you know. They're still going. I think Foghat's probably the only one that's got a different singer now. But
yeah, yeah, I think there's only one original member left in that band. But
I think so. I think it's the drummer, right?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But although I've known you a lot of years, I've never really been involved. I mean, I think you and I wrote one song together in the time that we played together. Tell me a little bit about your process. What's your songwriting process like?
Well, it changed. You know, before it used to be I used to write lyrics first for everything. And now it's just basically I'll sit down and be playing my guitar and come up with different riffs or different ideas. And if it's something I like, I'll put up a recorder and record that for, you know, a few seconds or a minute, whatever it is. And then I'll just compile, you know, 30, 40 different riffs. And then I'll go back and I'll sit down and start listening to them and figure out which ones I want to develop, you know. And then I'll sit down with a drum machine and start coming up with some ideas for drums. And then I'll structure a song and I'll come up with a melody sometimes while I'm playing, you know, and I'll record that, you know, just humming or whatever. And then I'll go back and write lyrics for it.
Right.
And usually I make the lyrics fit the song, you know. I don't. Once in a while I have to go and change something here and there, but it's usually the music is all written first.
Right.
I'm a big fan of, you know, like instrumental music.
Mm-hmm.
And I think any song that actually has lyrics to it could be an instrumental. I mean, it's still, if you're doing like Joe Satriani, it's all a melodic solo.
Right.
You know, it's, you know, there's a verse, there's definitely a verse and a chorus and all that stuff, you know.
Absolutely,
so,
yeah.
Yeah. But that's really the process. I mean, it's just compiling a bunch of riffs and then picking them apart and sometimes piecing together or coming up with more stuff and, you know, just building a song from there.
So that you're pretty much one of those guys who likes to have it all set before you go into the studio and then knock it out like that.
Yeah, I don't always have the lyrics written though.
Uh-huh.
I don't have the lyrics written until usually I'm the last couple things I've been doing and the one new one I got coming out, I didn't write the lyrics till all the music was recorded. I had ideas, you know, I had song titles or I, you know, like I said, if I was playing it when I was working it out or something, I'd record, you know, me singing a chorus or something, just, you know, with a little recorder going in the room, just so I had something to reference. But sometimes I go back and I hear something going through an old file or something like, oh, wow, I forgot I was actually singing it like that. I end up singing it totally different when I, you know, recorded the song, you know.
Right.
So
when you finally do get into the studio and you're actually starting to record, when it comes down to guitar solos, are those planned out or are they off the cuff?
I would say that they're 80% planned out.
Yeah.
I mean, it is off the cuff. I'll like loop it or something and just keep playing and playing until something grabs my attention. Then I'm like, okay, I like that part. Let me keep that. All right. So I got the first part of that figured out. Now let me work on the second part. Now I don't actually record it that way. I just try to come up with ideas as I go, and then I try to do it all as one take. Obviously, sometimes you can't because you just can't. You get tired of making a mistake or something. You're like, all right, I gotta punch it in right here because it's driving me crazy. Make it through the whole solo, and then I miss one little note, you know?
Right, right. So you do like to go for it, though. So it's not a matter of comping it and splicing everything together. It's
right, exactly. I want to go for it. I want it to try and be, you know, one steady solo.
Yeah, I'm with you there for sure.
But then, and the other thing is, too, is that, but sometimes I'm thinking in my head, okay, this would be cool if I panned this a little bit and maybe double this part here, a little harmony part or something. You know, I'm thinking about the production of it, too. I'm always planning ahead when I'm recording as well, which is a lot more, you know, it's more to think about, more to do, but it's what you have to do when you're, you know, pretty much producing yourself and recording yourself. So.
Yeah. Do you find wearing both hats, like that being the performer and the producer, is a daunting task?
Yeah, it's hard sometimes. And the biggest, hardest part is when, you know, you think, you know, is that good enough? Well, let me do it again. And sometimes you get to a point where like, all right, is anybody else going to hear the difference or just me, you know? You know, whether it's the way I sang a part or something or played, you know, a solo a little. Should I have played more notes or should I have played less? Because, you know, I come from the school that less is more. I like a melodic solo that, you know, and that comes from listening to Ace Frehley, you know. And, mm-hmm. you know all his solos, you know, and Ted Nugent and all that stuff, you know. But I don't know if I missed the question there, but that's how I approach everything.
Well, yeah, I mean, with those guys, too. I mean, I think I noticed that about your guitar solos. You can, you know, you listen to your songs enough, you can, I can hum your solos.
Right.
You know, and I remember Ace Frehley saying that, you know, a solo is a song within the song.
Yeah.
You know, there's got to be that beginning, that middle, and that really great ending. You know.
Yeah. So, but it's the other part about being objective too is that when you're mixing it.
Yeah.
Are the vocals loud enough? Are the guitars too loud? I mean, is somebody going to think, oh, well, he's a guitar player, and it sounds like it's all guitars? And the biggest compliment I get is when I see a review that somebody's done on my CD, and the first thing they say, well, being he's a soloist artist, I thought this was going to come across as, you know, upfront, all big, you know, I'm the mighty guitar player. He says, but, the, you know, they say it's not. It's like, it's a song. It's, you can hear everything. It's not about him. It's about the song, you know,
right.
Which makes me feel good because then I accomplished what I was trying to.
Right.
Absolutely. I'm not out there trying to, you know, be Yngwie Malmsteen or anything, you know, not that I could even play like that, but, you know, I'm not, that's not me. You know, I want to write a good song. I want somebody to remember it. I want them to be able to sing along, you know, and like you said, hum along or whatever to the solo.
Right. But at the same time, you do and always have done some really burning stuff. I mean, you know.
I don't look at it that way. You know, because to me, it's just, I always think there's a billion guys out there that can play faster than me, you know. But thanks for saying that, because I really don't feel like I play that way. But
well, you know, it's funny. It's not even about speed so much. I you know, and a lot of times, I think that gets misconstrued a lot. I mean, you have people who play really fast but don't play soulfully. Then you've got,
gotcha, yeah.
You know, then you've got these people, you know, like yourself, who play, who can play with some speed, but you play so soulfully. And, you know, there's a lot of blues in you, I don't know. I mean,
yeah, I think there is too, because that's one thing I really like. It's like when Gary Moore started doing blues albums and that, I was like, wow, this is great, you know?
Yeah.
And Pat Travers is another one, and we started doing those blues albums.
Yeah.
You know, I really got into that. And you might remember a song we used to play called New York City Blues.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, that was real bluesy. That had, you were doing little slide solo.
Yeah, that was fun.
So it was, it was cool. Yeah. I mean, I like the blues, no doubt about it. But I like the blues with an edge, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Something that, you know, with a good groove.
Yeah,
absolutely. You know, so in regards to the material that you're working on now that hasn't been released, and Cyanide Scream and In Your Face and all that, how is this new stuff going to differ from what you've done in the past?
Let's see. The new stuff, I think what's going to differ from the new solo disc, I'll say, we'll talk about that first, because I do have a Cyanide Scream disc too.
Yeah.
The new solo disc, it's going to have all kinds of elements in it. It's going to have heavy, heavy, you know, double kick, fast stuff. It's going to have slow songs. It's got everything. It's just like, I just, when I did In Your Face, I tried to write a really heavier CD, you know, more of like, you know, not like as heavy as Megadeth, but kind of like that kind of feel in some of the songs.
Right.
And I don't know, maybe it came across that way, I don't know. But this is more more hard rock, with some heavy metal stuff, and then there's some slower stuff, you know. So I think, you know, maybe even a little King's X influence in some of the songs, because they were another band I've always really liked that's way underrated.
Oh, for sure.
You know? And, but, yeah, it's hard for me to say that. I like it when somebody else listens to it and goes, oh, I hear so-and-so all over that, or, you know, because I'm like, really? I don't hear that, you know, but... You know, it's, everybody interprets things differently. So
yeah.
As far as like the next Cyanide Scream, that's pretty much going to be along the same lines as the first one.
Well, I love that first one. I think it's amazing. That opening track is just rips my face off. It's just fantastic.
Already Gone?
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
I'm actually going to play that tune.
Cool.
Yeah, so that's really great, really great. And you got a good friend of ours on there on drums who is just...
Yes, who we played with a long time ago, yeah.
Yeah.
Kirk Fehrenbach.
Yeah, I'll tell you, one of the best pocket drummers on the planet, I got to tell you.
Yes, he is. And I know when I work with him, I'm pushing him to be more of what he normally is.
Yeah.
But I think he accepts the challenge and you know, it's funny because I'll go to his place, we record drum tracks at his place, and... You know, I don't know if I can do that. I go, yes, you can. Just keep doing it. You can do it. You'll get it. You'll figure it out. If you can't do it this way, then do it the way you feel like doing it, you know. Put your stamp on it.
But he's, you know, he's interesting, too. You, him, me, and some of the other people that we've played with, we all came from such wide variety of listening. You know, we listen to so many different types of music, and it can't help but to spill over into... your lexicon.
Yeah.
And it comes out. It comes out, you know. It definitely comes out.
Yeah. So it's fun working with him. You know, it's good to have that friend that, you know, I've known him for so long. So sit down and say anything to each other and you don't get mad at each other, you know.
Right, absolutely.
It's like having a brother that, you know, you can do whatever you want. It doesn't matter.
Absolutely.
He doesn't hold a grudge. I don't hold a grudge. You know, some people get sensitive and get upset and, you know. But, it's a pretty good friendship him and I have, so...
That's great.
I wish we could work more together, but, you know, he is in another band, and it takes up time to do this stuff. It takes a lot of time, so...
Well,
so... You know, I'm always writing, so it's like, I wish I could just have him here. All right, play drums on this track right now.
So tell me, what are we looking ahead into the rest of 2012 and 2013?
Well, I'm trying to get all the artwork finalized for the next solo disc, which is called Dodge the Bullet. The next Cyanide Scream CD, the label has it. They're just starting to do artwork and layout. I'm not sure when that's going to come out, if it's going to be this year or next year. You know, they have all the control over that. So, and that's about it, really. I mean, I got an offer to play some shows in November back east, and I might be doing it. Not sure, though. It's just, you know, a logistics thing. It's hard because everybody's scattered around. So it's one of those things you got to have. Try and have a few dates set up so that we can get together and rehearse and make it worth it, you know. But you never know. I mean, there's other opportunities coming along we might play. Who knows?
Right.
You know, I would like to, you know, sometimes I wish I could play out more, but, you know, it's just, I like working with Eric, and, you know, if he ever relocates to this part of the country, that's going to be a different story, obviously, so.
Well, you know, it's funny, he and his brother, me and his brother, actually, I should say, who lives here in Austin with me, we've been talking to him quite a bit about it. We're trying to get him to come visit.
Yeah. I want to come out that way too, man. I'd love to see you guys.
Yeah, it'd be great for you to come on down. Have you ever been to Austin?
No, I never have.
It'll blow your mind.
Great things about it, you know. So I know because Eric was talking about going, and I said, "Well, if you're gonna go, let me know. Maybe I'll come out too or something."
That'd be a hoot.
See everybody, you know.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah, I thought maybe we can get a jam going.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Hey,
come on, play some of them old Soul Crunch songs.
Oof. Oofa.
The ones you wrote, though.
No, let's do the ones you wrote.
I didn't write that many of them.
Yeah, well, let's do the ones you sang.
Oh, okay.
Nobody wants to hear me croaking anymore.
No way, man. You had a great voice. What are you talking about? It was awesome. I loved playing with you, man. I loved your voice. I loved soul to it.
And I tell you, you were my Joe Perry.
Yeah, that's what you say, man. That's cool.
So listen, let's talk about I'm such a fiend when it comes to gear, and I know you've got quite the stash. So, just, you know, give me an idea. How many guitars?
You want to begin with amps, guitars?
No, let's start with guitars. Let's start with the cherry on top.
Well, I think I have a problem. I've actually got it under control within the last year. I've only bought a couple, two or three, but I've actually sold quite a few. So, but my favorite guitar is a Flying V style guitar. You know, I had one long. You know, I had that Explorer like I talked about earlier, which I still have. And shortly after getting that, I had a V for a while. And then I ended up trading it in for Marshall Stacks or something like ridiculous like that. You know, and got away from the V for a while. And then just kind of rediscovered it when I first moved to Arizona, and it's just been an obsession with me, man. I have, I don't even know how many I have, but it's well over 50 for everything I have, so. And don't worry, my house has a security system, so.
Sure it does.
It's all protected.
So what would you say are your gems?
Oh, let me see. Well, obviously the Explorer, because it's so old and it's the original one. I have a custom-made guitar by an unknown company that plays as good, if not better, than any other guitar I have. You know, it was a tenth of the price, to not exaggerate. You know, but I like my Gibson V's. You know, there's a few that I play all the time. There's a few that I bought and have been sitting in the case. I have a Hamer guitar, which I played when I was playing with you guys.
Yeah.
And I always wanted a Hamer V and a Hamer Standard. I finally was able to buy them used, and they're awesome guitars. I mean, it's just, but I never play them. You know, they sit in a case. That's the thing. There are certain guitars I don't ever want to use because I'm afraid I'm going to nick it up or ding it. You know, I don't want to play it at a gig.
Right.
You know, afraid somebody will steal it. You know, it sucks when you have such nice things, but you're afraid to use it because of what could happen to it, you know, if that makes any sense.
No, I get you.
Yeah.
You know,
I have Deans, I have Hamer, Gibson, Fender, Washburn, DBZ, which is Dean, from Dean Guitars, his own company, you know, ESP, I mean, geez. I'm probably leaving some manufacturers out, but I cover them all, you know. I'm just one of those guys that if I see something, I want to try it, and it works out great, you know.
Yeah. What was that? You had this crazy-looking blue Fender when I played with you. What was that?
A Music Master.
That's what it was.
Yeah, Music Master. I still have that, too.
And that was hot-rodded, though, right?
Yeah. The original one came with some weird, funky bridge. And it had a single coil pickup, which, you know, obviously this works sometimes, but not for me, hardly any of the time. And I actually have a Strat, which I love it now, you know. But so I put in a Carvin pickup, as a matter of fact, and ended up having a Washburn guitar that I had a bridge laying around. I had that put on and changed the nut and had a new pickguard made for it. So it's basically just the body and the neck. everything else is different, but it always played great and still does. I don't think I've played that guitar in 10 years, you know?
Yeah.
It's sitting in a case. But yeah, that was a Fender Music Masters.
I remember that
one. It was, yeah.
Yeah, that was a cool little oddity. I enjoyed that guitar. Hey, when you're talking about the Washburn, that wouldn't happen to be an A20V, would it?
Is that the one that's kind of like a short, crunched-up Explorer?
Yeah, like I call it a retarded Explorer.
Yeah, okay. I think the guy Carlos from Quiet Riot played one or
that's
something.
That's right.
That's
right. He did. Yes.
Yeah. It was one of those. I had it, and actually ended up selling it to a friend of mine. But I don't have that anymore.
Yeah. All right, so what about amps?
Oh, amps, okay. For recording, I usually, one of the basic amps I use is Engel Fireball.
Mm-hmm.
I love those amps, great amps. It's like the sound I was always trying to get my whole life, and you plug in, it's there, you know. I have a couple crank Chadwick heads that are not a very high gain. They're just like a rock amp. I have a Soldano Hot Rod 50. Again, it's not a real high gain amp. I bought a Bugera amp, which, you know, they're always getting sued because they're basically copying everybody else's amps and selling them for, you know, a third of the price. that's a three-channel amp. It's a really good sounding amp. It's actually, I use it a lot on the Cyanide Scream CD. And I also have PV Triple X, another crank amp, a Mesa Boogie, which I had when I played with you, a dual rectifier.
Right.
Which I actually used on the new solo disc.
Ah.
One channel. I used that with a combination of the crank on one channel. Or no, actually that and the PV Triple X on one channel. And the Engel and the crank on the other channel. I usually just, you know, I wire it and record them. And then you do like a blend of the two amps.
Oh, okay, so you run them together at the same time.
Yeah.
Right.
And then, I don't like double track. I just run it together. Just adds, you know, I just bring it up a little bit just to change the sound a little bit of the amp, you know.
Right.
And, you know, cabinets, Engel cabinets with Celestion 30s, Marshall cabinets. I also have Line 6 amps, the Spider Valve. You know, I got crank cabinets and Line 6 cabinets and Boogie cabinets. It's a little ridiculous. I've sold a bunch of those too, but, you know. That's really it, though. Like I said, those are my main amps.
Yeah.
I also have Marshall JMP1 preamp, too.
Uh-huh.
I used to use a pod rack thing, but I got rid of that.
Right.
My Line 6. Just really was using it as a tuner, and I realized, like, why do I even have this? I don't even use this thing. So
right.
It's one of those things to make more room.
So getting back to the whole idea of you running the amps in a Y and tracking them all together at the same time. So you never, ever double track your rhythm parts?
Well, no, what I'll do is I'll do it left and a right. On some of my older recordings, I did double track them.
Yeah.
I'd have two on one side and two on the other. But the last probably, I don't know how many, maybe five or six, I actually just one guitar to left and one to the right. But I will use a blend of different amps.
Right.
So, and sometimes I'll just use one amp, and it all depends on how it sounded with everything else, you know.
Now, do you run straight into the amp, or do you use a pedal board?
No, I pretty much go straight into the amp. The only thing I might have on there is some kind of gate or something, or, you know, something to quiet it down.
Right.
And sometimes it gets a little crazy. And the other thing I've learned over the years, too, is that less gain is better, you know. It's like, yeah, I hear some of these recordings of people, and they just have so much gain that there's no definition of the guitar.
Right.
I've been learning to back that off, and it gives it a little chunkier, and it cuts through a little better.
Yeah, you can hear more of the wood.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. So, what about your live rig when you do live? What would be your weapon of choice?
Believe it or not, I used a Line 6 amp only because of. It's got everything built into it. It's got an effects loop in it. I mean, effects processor in it, so I can dial in specific delays and chorus or reverb or whatever I want, and just there's a pedal board that goes to it.
Right.
And it's all built into the amp, and I can channel switch, and I got a volume pedal and a crybaby all built in. So the reason why I do that is just because it's so easy. It's just like, okay, if I'm going to set up and play, I want to be able to do this as easy as possible. And that Line 6 amp is, you know, it's a tube. It's all tube.
Right.
And it has, you know, it's sounds really good. I mean, I was, you know, I'm a tube guy through and through, so anything solid state was always hard for me to deal with.
Right.
But they came out with this, and I tried it out. I was like, okay, that would work in a live situation. And, you know, it has the modeling settings, and, you know, I'm dialing it in, get it to where I like it. And I look in the book or whatever, I'm like, oh, look, I got it dialed in as a Mesa Boogie amp. Imagine that. That's what I used to use live all the time, you know. So
that's funny.
That's my main amp for live, just because of its ease. I do have another setup where I have what the heck is it called? Jeez, I can't remember it. I have to go look. Hold on. I think it's made by DOD.
Oh, okay.
It's a self-contained unit with everything in it, you know.
Right.
It's Digitech. I'm sorry. Okay. But that has everything built in it as well. So that's something I could take if I was going somewhere and somebody was providing a backline, and I can just plug it into an amp, no matter what amp it is, and I can go. You know, because sometimes you play those gigs where the equipment's provided, and you have no idea what's there, and you're just like, yeah, 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 but at least you can still get your sound with this thing.
Right.
So that's my alternate number two, so.
Well, that's cool. Hey, listen, before I let you go, there's a question I ask everybody. If you can, this is a brain teaser for you, but your three favorite guitar-oriented albums of all time, what would you say they are?
Guitar-oriented, huh? As far as you mean, like just instrumentals or?
No, just guitar. I mean, you know, real good guitar albums.
I would say, you know, one of them I would say is Ted Nugent Double Live Gonzo, because there's some crazy extended soloing on some of those songs. Well, that's a tough one. That's really hard to pick for me because I have such a vast collection of music. You know, why don't you tell me what yours are, and then I'll tell you if I agree.
Well, I got to tell you, as far as rock albums goes, classic rock albums go, for me,
Aerosmith. I mean, there's yeah. Classic, like either Rocks or
yeah.
You know,
Rocks is the album.
Attic, you know.
Yeah, I mean, have, go back and listen to Rocks with headphones on.
Yeah, maybe I'll do that.
You know, I mean, it's a mind blower, that album, with headphones on. You know, and now we're waiting for that new album, and it's being produced by Jack Douglas.
Again, yeah.
Again.
But it's pushed back now again, right?
I don't know. I haven't looked at...
Yeah, I saw that they pushed the date back again or something. Like, why are they delaying this thing?
Who knows?
So we got the Aerosmith, you know, any one of those two Aerosmiths, I'd say, for guitar. And then another thing for me is, like... I try to play. I actually played some slide guitar on a song on the new CD. So when I listen to Foghat live,
uh-huh.
Album just blows me away when I hear that. I know I'm going to a lot of live albums, but there's some phenomenal slide guitar play on that. And that's not something I do that well, so maybe that's why I gravitate towards that, and I'm really impressed by it.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, you know, we grew up during the era of the live album. I mean, it was huge. I mean, you had Frampton Comes Alive, you had the Foghat Live, you had the Kiss Alive, you had, I mean, everybody had a live album.
Cheap Trick, you know.
So, yeah, Budokan.
Yeah. Budokan album. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that was a big album too. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I guess those are, if I was going to say, you know, it's going back to my roots again, you know, those three albums.
Right. So tell people where they can reach out to you. And I mean, obviously people can go to iTunes and pick up Steve Cohen and Cyanide Night Scream albums.
Amazon.com. You can find it there.
Right.
By Spotify, I think is how you say it. That's something new here in the U.S.
Right.
And I've been available over in Europe on that for a while. If you're into the digital thing, obviously.
Right.
Any of the major digital online dealers, you can find my music there. If you want physical CDs, the Cyanide Scream is an import thing, so it's a little tougher to find, and it's actually really expensive. But, you know, there's links on stevecohen.net, or even, you know, my MySpace page, you can find me there.
Mm-hmm.
You can buy CDs direct from my website. You can go to CD Baby.
Mm-hmm.
They sell all my stuff as well.
Mm-hmm. And people can
actually do digital downloads as well, and they're actually a lot cheaper there. I have really reduced cheap there. So.
All right. And people can visit you on Facebook as well?
Yeah, Facebook, yeah. Yeah, Steve Cohen Official. You know, I have my own personal page, but I try to keep the two separate. And there's, you know, Cyanide Scream Facebook page, but all these pages are so hard to maintain, you know?
Yeah.
MySpace, Facebook. It's like, geez.
Yeah, well, that's why the Guitar Radio Show has opted not to do a website initially.
Right.
We're gonna work off of our Facebook page.
Yeah.
It's just easier that way.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's just there's just so much to maintain. I mean, it's hard for me to even update the stevecohn.net. It's work every time I've got to do something to it, you know. Yeah. It's like it's so much easier to go up these other pages and, you know, within a second you got a post or a blog or, a, you know, something, you know.
Right. Absolutely.
That's it. I mean, that's where you can get the CDs pretty much any of those places, you know.
Yeah. Well, Steve, thanks so much for taking the time out to speak with us today.
Well, thank you, Mark. It was great talking to you.
It's always great talking to you, and I miss you a whole bunch, and I hope you do get down to Austin.
Yeah, we'll have to figure something out, you know?
Yeah, that'd be great. And if you do, bring some guitars. And if you don't, I'll restring something for you.
Yeah. Do you have any of those upside-down righties that you,
I do.
You can do?
I still got the, burnt-up Hamer, you know?
The V?
No, that one I sold. No, I still got I still got the special, though.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, I was playing that last night.
Definitely, man. If we can get Eric to come down, we should try and figure something out. Learn some songs and jam, and that'd be fun.
That would be a blast. That'd be a blast. And if you ever do, if you decide not to
play bass,
if you decide not to, if you decide to actually add a rhythm guitar to your show in on the East Coast, let me know. I'll come play rhythm.
Awesome. That would be great.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Definitely think about that. That'd be cool. Definitely.
I could probably get the parts down. I think I could still do it.
I think you can, man. You always underestimated yourself.
That's true.
You always play great, man.
All right, Steve. Hey, man. Let's tell them again where they can reach you. StevCohn.net and Steve Cohn official Facebook page.
And it's MySpace Steve Cohn.
Right.
The same for all the Cyanide Scream stuff as well.
That's great. All right, folks. Check out Steve Cohn, and we'll be talking to you soon, all right?
All right, man. Thanks a lot.
All right, thanks.
Bye.
Bye.